Well, thank you very much for this invitation to take part in this panel discussion. I was going to make a few observations about the changing pattern of Australia's trade and investment relationships, because we've heard already that Australia is very much becoming integrated into Asia, and I want to expand on some of those comments. Let me start by making a few comments about, with a few facts on international trade. Because over the past decade, there's been a very significant change in the Australia's trade patterns. And this has been driven by the rise of China and, more recently, India. So China has now become Australia's largest export market. It takes almost a quarter of Australia's exports. 10 years ago, less than 5% of our exports went to China. India used to be a relatively insignificant export market for us 10 years ago. It now takes 7% of our exports. The rise in the share of exports going to China and India hasn't come at the expense of our traditional Asian markets, namely Japan and Korea. Rather, it's come from an offsetting decline in exports to the United States, New Zealand, South Africa, and South America. And so the overall share of our exports going to Asia, which was already quite high, it increased a lot in the 1980s, has increased further now to around 70%. Now, many people have noted that with China and India still at a relatively early phase of their economic development, it's likely that they will continue to grow strongly for many years yet, and so will their demand for resources. It's hard to argue with that conclusion, although we should keep in mind that, like all countries, China and India will experience economic cycles around this very strong trend growth. In the case of our imports, China has also increased its share sharply over the past decade from about 6% to 17%. Europe as a whole and the countries of Southeast Asia as a group have a larger share than this, but China is the single largest country source of our imports. China's growing share of Australia's imports in recent years has mainly been at the expense of the United States and Japan. And this change in share between China, United States and Japan has partly come about because United States companies and Japanese companies have shifted some of their, or relocated some of their manufacturing plants to China. So in short, you can see that over the past decade there's been a very significant refocusing of Australia's trade towards China and more recently India. When it comes to foreign investment, in the public mind, China has again figured very prominently. But the facts, however, show that even though Chinese investment in Australia has increased a lot in recent years, it currently accounts for only a very small share of foreign investment into Australia. The Bureau of Statistics publishes figures on foreign investment quite often. As at the end of 2008, the total amount of Australian assets owned by foreign entities, by Chinese entities here in Australia, stood at about $8 billion. This is less than half of 1% of the total foreign investment in Australia. So that puts China a long way down the list in terms of importance as a source of foreign investment to Australia. Looked at from China's perspective, Australia accounts for an even smaller share of its total offshore investment. Less than 0.25% of its foreign investment is in Australia. And furthermore, this share hasn't really increased in recent years. So I think we can conclude from that China does not have a particularly strong bias towards Australia and its foreign investments. Now, the Bureau of Statistics figures probably understate the importance of China as a source of investment to Australia, because it would not identify as Chinese any investment coming to Australia that was channeled through accounts in third countries, such as, particularly the offshore financial centres, such as London and even Hong Kong. But any such investment would be more of a portfolio nature rather than direct investment, and would not result in control of companies here in Australia. One of the reasons why China may be getting such a high public profile in the area of foreign investment is that in the past couple of years, it has accounted for a large share of the proposals put to the Foreign Investment Review Board. In 2007-2008, over 20% of the number of approvals given by the Foreign Investment Review Board were from China. However, most of these involved only small projects, and if you look at their share of the value of approvals, that was less than 5%. When the figures for 2008-2009 are available, they're not available yet, it's likely that they will show a significantly bigger share because, as we know, in that year, approvals given to Chinalco to invest in Rio Tinto. But in the end, that investment didn't proceed. When it comes to foreign investment, Australia's main relationships are still very much with the traditional partners of the United Kingdom and the United States. The largest holding of foreign investment in Australia is by the United Kingdom, reflecting a history of over 200 years of investment here, and the fact that as a major financial centre, a lot of investment coming to Australia from other parts of the world is channeled via UK funds managers. The United Kingdom accounts for about a quarter of the outstanding value of foreign investment in Australia. The United States is not far behind at about 24%. If we look at the flow of new investment, the United States is by far the largest source of new investment into Australia over the past decade. Investment in Australia by Asian countries, whether we measure it in terms of the stock of outstanding investment or the flow of new investment, remains quite small in comparison. Japan is by far the largest Asian investor in Australia, and its share is 5%. The other Asian countries' investments here are noticeably smaller. If we look at Australian investment overseas, the relationship is even more skewed towards the United States. Over the past decade, almost a half of all foreign investment by Australians went to the United States. Europe was the next largest destination for our savings, and the amounts going to Asia have been relatively small. So in broad summary, these figures show that while Australia is very much linked to Asia, and particularly China, in respect to trade flows, when it comes to foreign investment, it's mainly linked to the United States and to the United Kingdom. So what does this mean for the Australian economy and the Australian markets? So let me start with some comments about Australian financial markets. Anybody who follows financial markets reasonably closely knows that developments in US financial markets have a big influence on what happens here. The correlation between the Australian stock market and the US stock market is very high, as is the correlation between the Australian bond market and the US bond market. Similarly, news about the US is very influential in terms of the Australian dollar exchange rate, and it tends to affect the price of many of the resources that Australia sells. It used to be the case that the US economy also had a big influence on Australia's real economy. For much of my working life at the Reserve Bank, if you could get a good feel for what was happening to the US economy, you'd have a reasonably good idea of what was going to happen to the Australian economy. The correlation between Australian and US GDP growth was very high. US news still dominates the daily flow of economic and financial information from overseas, and so it still plays a dominant role in shaping perceptions about what's happening to the world economy. But the correlations between the United States and the Australian economies has nonetheless declined noticeably over the past decade, and in particular, the US has now had two recessions, one in 2001 and the current one, which have had a relatively muted impact on Australia. There's no doubt that a lot of factors have contributed to this, but one of them is the fact that the growing trade linkages between Australia and China are increasingly pulling the Australian economy away from the US towards the Chinese economy. China is our largest export market, and Australia is the largest supplier of bulk commodities to China. So our economies are very intertwined. Various people, including Glenn Stevens, as recently as last night, and Phil Lowe from the Reserve Bank as well, and Ken Henry from the Treasury, have spoken about this recently and what this means for the Australian economy in the medium term. There's also been, as I'm sure you've noticed, a lot of attention in the media about this recently. Now, I think when you look at all those, what people are saying, three things emerge out of that. The first is that Australia will most likely face an extended period of prosperity in the years ahead. Some of this will come about through strong real economic growth due to increased investment and increased exports. Some of it will also come about by high commodity prices, because if the last 5 years is any experience, the supply chain involved in the production of resources in Australia and elsewhere around the world has struggled to keep up with rising Chinese and Indian demand for commodity prices, and for commodities, and this is keeping prices very high. Commodity prices are still at a very high level historically, despite the global recession we've had in the last year or so. And I think that indicates that the demand-supply balance in commodity markets remains fairly tight. And it could tighten further, of course, as the global economy recovers. A second theme that emerges from this is that the prosperity could put strains on the Australian economy, and not all sectors of the economy will benefit from it. It's possible, for example, that some sectors of the economy will suffer as labour and capital are going to be competed away by faster growing sectors and different parts of the economy. In general, workers are going to be in short supply, leading to demand for skilled migrants, and there's going to be quite fast population growth. We've already had, as you know, very strong population growth over the past year. This in turn is going to have implications for housing markets, again an area where the demand-supply balance is very tight. Investment, which in Australia is already very high by developed economy standards, will need to rise further. We know how much investment is taking place in this state here. The financing of that investment is going to come to a large extent from offshore, so we're going to have a lot of capital inflow. A lot of that investment is also going to be imported. So we're going to have a situation where the current account deficit is going to be widened, possibly to much higher levels than was experienced in the past, and that's going to be matched by increased capital inflow. The third theme is that the forces that are going to be at work in the economy are going to pose quite a number of significant policy challenges. Glenn Stevens dealt with these at some length last night in his talk, so I won't go over that ground again here, but it's worth keeping in mind that these challenges are really about the medium term. They're not about the next year or so. And there's also no reason to assume that they will be beyond our capacity to handle, so I think we should remain quite positive about our prospects. So thank you very much for your attention.
Can I ask, Rick, in relation to Chinese stockpiling, particularly of our resources, are we likely to see a situation in which their purchases at a time when we're in recovery will be coming off?
This question of the Chinese stockpiling of resources, it gets a lot of attention. I don't think anybody's completely sort of aware of all the facts here. We've looked into this as much as we can. All the information we have is there's no excessive stockpiling of resources in China, and that basically stockpiles were run down very sharply through the crisis. This happened on stocks in all sorts of spheres were run down. They've been rebuilt, but there is not a huge excess stockpiling. The thing is that the two resources they buy the most of, coal and iron ore, are so bulky they're very hard to stockpile. So my feeling is that demand will continue to grow.